Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to Clash of the Titles, the podcast that pits two movies with something in common in a fight to the death to see which one comes out victorious. On Monday's episode, we were hanging with the losers, which means today it's time to see what happens when you update one of the most iconic 80s television shows in history for a 2010 audience, as we're hiring the A-Team.
Wow, I'm a little taken back, I'm not gonna lie.
Lieutenant.
I'm sorry, am I supposed to call you Lieutenant back?
No, you're supposed to call me Captain.
Captain? Captain?
That's right.
Captain Crunch, look at you. Wow. So I guess you said no to the kids, no to the family, just no ladder you can't climb,
no,
huh?
No, honey, I just said no to you.
Hello. My name's Percy. Would you like some pork?
If I broke every bone in your hand, could you still do that?
So which film will escape victorious into the Los Angeles underground and which will be convicted for a crime it committed against cinema? We'll know by the end of the show, so let's get it on. Welcome to Clash of the Titles.
Release the Kraken.
Hello, Clash Butters. Are they trying to shoot down that other drone? No. They're trying to fly that tank. I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
And welcome to part two of The Losers versus the A-Team. And, of course, the verdict as to which is the better film coming up at the end of the show. Also, if you missed Monday's episode, the Tilsonator is right now flying across the Atlantic. No, he'll be in Austin by now.
I don't know.
I don't know either. He's somewhere in the world and he's having a great time. I'm sure he is. But he'll be back in a couple of weeks. So if you are a fan of Chris Tilly, a.k.a. Chris Thrilly, he will be back in 2 weeks' time.
That's right.
It's going to be great. I'm going to look forward to him welcoming him with open arms, the weird, hairy monkey man that he is. So in the absence of Chris Tilly, a.k.a. Chris Thrilly, I'll be reading a review from the digital mailbag this
week.
How
nice.
Yeah, it's nice. I don't usually get to do this, so I hope I do it right. Here we go.
Have you picked a good one?
I think so.
That's half the job.
It's not one of the ones that Chris likes where it has a go at one of us because he thinks it's character building.
I'd hate that. I hate it.
So no, this is a good one. This says, this show is amazing for anyone looking to move into screenwriting.
Oh, lovely.
5 stars. And that is a review for the John August and Craig Mazin podcast, Script Notes.
But that's such a fair review as well, actually. Mm.
So I thought I'd mix it up this week and do a review for a different podcast.
That's podcasting, that's a community.
Yeah, and it's a very good show, Script
it is.
Notes. Yeah. So this is one of ours. Terrible, 1 star. There you go. No, this review is from Timmer, which I've said like that because it is written T-M-M-E-H, so I'm assuming it's in reference to South Park's Timmy. It says, Vicky, Alex and Chris, I'm slightly addicted to your podcast. Can you do The Twilight or 50 Shades of Grey so I can have a week off? If not, how about Prometheus versus Alien Covenant so we can see if Ridley Scott's okay?
Because we're not sure.
It's just funny. Is it? Prometheus and Alien Covenant. Is he okay? That's how I read it, and I'm a Prometheus fan. Alien Covenant, gonna fuck off. Love the pod. It's witty, insightful, and my constant companion at work. P.S. Tell Vicky it's almost possible to go all in, but only if someone's coming at you with a catheter.
I knew it.
And PBS, Frank Welker!
So as an emergency response, it is possible. Yep. I knew it. Mm. Coming at you with a catheter. I wonder if they, well, did they know? I've had a catheter. They were very nice about it.
Were they?
Yeah. I loved it, weirdly.
Why?
Oh, just the feeling of not having to wee. It's just a weird feeling.
Okay.
Yeah. Have you ever had one?
I've not had a catheter, no. Yeah, so what happens?
What happens?
Just talk me through. I'm sort of a little bit misty on what a catheter actually does.
Well, unless I'm thinking of the wrong thing. Mm. So it's when I've had C-sections.
Yep.
So I don't feel it going in because I've had an epidural. And then I'm just lying there in a hospital bed.
And it's all coming out?
It's just going into a bag. Right. It's a lovely warm bag sort of by your top of your thigh, and then I'm just conscious that normally you're like, oh, I need a wee, you've got to go to the loo, that's annoying in a hospital, I've got to leave these babies, that's a nightmare. And then it's like, no, I don't need to do any of that. Brilliant.
So are you consciously having a wee though when
no,
you're weeing?
No.
Oh, it's
all sort of taken care of.
Wow.
Yeah.
That sounds great.
I really enjoyed it.
It reminds me of the Simpsons gag where Homer's like, he sees a guy on a ventilator and he's like, here I am using my own lungs. And it's a bit like that. Here I am having to think about urinating.
It's actually helpful in a situation because you've got a lot else to think about, such as keeping these babies alive. And that's one less job to do, isn't it?
Cool.
Yeah.
So have you thought about having one just, you know, for the first couple of years?
No, yeah, that's a good point. And just if it's in my future when I'm older, I won't resist it. I'll be grateful for the help it provides.
You should read, I don't know if I mentioned this, the Thursday Murder Club.
You're on commission. What the fuck is going on?
It's set in a retirement village, and it makes being in a retirement village, which I've always thought must be one of their most hellish experiences once you get old, but it makes it sound really good fun.
Okay.
It's a work of fiction, but it does sound
no such
really
care home exists.
It makes it sound like, remember when you were in student halls? When we were in student halls,
yeah,
it was like bowling around student halls, like having a fucking great time with people your own age, no responsibilities, just having a laugh, drinking. It makes it sound. I've started to believe that is what being in a retirement village. As long as you've still got your faculties, so you know that you can just eat and drink it responsibility free.
Yeah, with your buddies,
exactly.
It does sound good.
It does.
Yeah, as long as you've got your health.
All right, then. So, bit of housekeeping. Next week it begins Clash Week. Our month-long countdown to the greatest night of the year, that is Halloween. We'll be doing four horror movie clashes as we celebrate the wonder of All Hallows Eve. So if you join in the regular Guess the Clash, that should narrow down the options. Clash Halloween begins next week. I can't fucking wait.
I always enjoy it. It's always great.
It's I love horror, and I love being forced to watch horror.
Yeah.
And I love watching horror that potentially I haven't seen. Mm. And I love talking about horror. And I love Halloween.
Yeah.
I'm so excited.
Good.
So Clash Halloween starts next week. Let's do this. On Monday, Vicky was the loser, which means today I'm obviously in the A-team. Let me take you. Begin scene. Let me take you on a journey. After a massively fortuitous coincidental meeting with both B.A. Baracus and Howling Mad Murdoch in Mexico, airborne rangers Hannibal and his protege Face form a brand new military unit called Alpha Team, or A-Team. This crack commando unit is sent to prison for a crime they didn't commit. These men promptly escape from a maximum security stockade, and that is where the film deviates from the TV show, as they don't survive as soldiers of fortune, but instead attempt to clear their names by recovering some stolen forging plates, Black Forest Gatto, and a general posing as a blah, blah, blah. Let's be clear, they fly a tank and it's fucking awesome! Clash Brothers, for your consideration, The A-Team. So, when did you see this movie?
I really thought I'd seen it.
Oh.
And Mark really thought we'd seen it.
Oh.
And then it's not. We haven't. It's not.
It's not. Have you seen it? It's not.
It's not. For the whole start, we were like, God, what, when did we even see it? I don't know, Mark, because this none of this feels familiar. And I was like, they don't even know each other. They're not even the A team yet. So we can't have seen it. So we just, I don't know. Maybe I did and I've just completely forgotten. I thought it.
You wouldn't forget they fly a tank.
Yeah, I wouldn't forget that.
You wouldn't forget that.
But I'm a huge fan of the A team from the 80s.
So good. We're going to talk about it.
Yeah, we just used to watch it at my grandma's house. I absolutely loved it.
Saturday afternoons, ITV.
Yeah.
I love the little sting. I've forgotten his name. I've got it. I'll tell you when it comes up. I think I've written it down. The guy at the end who's the actual creator. I've never loved like a sting for like the production company where he's typing on the typewriter and he takes out the bit of paper and it flies towards the screen then becomes a digital.
Yeah, cool. So, yeah, haven't seen it, but I'm a fan of the 80s. And I'm a fan of Joe Carnahan as well, so...
Really?
I love Nark.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't really love everything.
Do you know
else,
what?
But...
That's wrong. I shouldn't have said really. I said really enough. Because in prep for this, I watched Smoking Aces, which was another blank on my CV that on paper is exactly
I thought you'd
the kind
seen it
of
and
movie.
Loved it.
No.
What's the one that came out recently? Cop something?
Oh, no, I didn't see that. The Grey. I'm a big fan of The Grey.
Yeah.
I like The Grey. But no, Smoking Aces, what a... Like, never as a movie, and I tolerate some shit and actually wallow in that shit for want of a better visual image.
Yeah.
There's me rolling round in celluloid shit and having the fucking best time. However, Smoke and Aces, they left such a nasty taste in my mouth. Have you seen it?
No.
Oh, it's just nasty. Where it should be fun, it's grim.
Okay.
And then, like, at the end, it reaches for, like, this powerful, dramatic conclusion. You're like, nope, no, did not earn that. What on earth are you doing? But, yeah, normally, I'm a Carnahan fan. I've not seen it. It's Cop Shop, Cop Shop, that's the
that's
one.
That's it.
Yeah. All right, then. So I'm going to roll some incredibly loaded dice right now. Mark hated it.
This?
Yep.
He said it would have been nice if it had been funnier, which is not scathing by his standards, to be honest. Yeah, he sat through it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I expected worse.
Yeah, I guess I did. I don't know what it is that charmed him.
Maybe he's changed. Maybe he's softening.
Maybe he was just on his phone, not paying attention.
So, when did you first see it? Oh, you didn't. You just answered that.
About
God.
3 days ago.
Good,
yeah.
Great, excellent. So, I wasn't sure how I was going to feel about watching this. I watched it in a screening room just before its release. Gave it 4 out of 5 in the paper, as I said, on Monday. Wasn't sure how I was going to feel about it because, like you, bloody loved the original A-Team. But specifically, I styled myself as Howling Mad Murdoch as a child.
Yeah, he was my absolute favourite.
Brilliant.
Yep.
You're not going to like this. I mean, you might like this. You might not care. People can be right-wing and all right, but Dwight Schultz, who plays Murdoch, is quite an active right-wing commentator.
It's just a little bit heartbreaking because I was also a big fan of him in Star Trek as well. Mm. So I just, a lot of my childhood was taken up with watching him do stuff, but whatever. Yeah, you know.
I mean, I blame Murdoch for why I spent a huge portion of my childhood in baseball hat because I was just obsessed with him. His look,
right.
The jacket, the Converse, everything.
It's a good look.
He was great. He's great. So I wasn't sure. And then I watched it and I was like, yep, I buy into this. Great. Love it.
We're fine.
Brilliant. Fly a tank. So I'll tell you a bit about it. The original A-Team, 5 seasons there were of the original A-Team between 1983 and 1987 on NBC in the US, ITV here. The first 3 seasons, huge hits. Fourth, for no clear reason, ratings started to drop. And the 5th season, no one was really interested in it anymore, to the point that NBC even screened the finale as the penultimate episode by mistake.
Oh,
so,
no.
A lot of people, no one seemed to care. There wasn't a like, oh, you ruined the end of the A-Team.
No one was watching.
Just died a sort of slow death. But it is fondly remembered for a few things. The fact that no one died, that theme tune, and obviously those 4 characters. So much so that when Yahoo did a survey in 2003 of which, and this is 2003, so I think literally all of these have been updated by now, right now, and more. But when they asked what old TV show would you like to see rebooted for the big screen, the A-Team was number one.
Right.
Beat out Dukes of Hazzard at number 2 and Knight Rider at number 3.
It's a 20-year-old survey that you're talking about right now, but valid, a valid point.
cool cars. That's all it is. It's boys going, I love the 18 van. I like Knight Rider. I like the General Lee. Great. So unsurprisingly, it's been around since the mid-90s, though. The idea of rebooting the A-Team. I dug and dug, and I couldn't find much about those mid-90s scripts, who was writing them, who was talked about directing them.
Yeah, well, I was interested. I did try to do this level of research. I was saying to Nikki on our way in, but I wanted to know if someone had, you know, was there a little bit of that Hollywood thing where someone's like, I'm writing a script for The Losers and guess what it's got in it? Or I'm writing the A-Team and guess what? And then, you know, it's things by osmosis, let's say.
The Dread Raid situation.
Yeah, yeah, because the similarities. I'm not even talking about the central conceit. That's fine. No one gets to own that. But I mean about the billion in cash and the LA port and stuff like that. It is remarkable.
Yeah, trapped in a skyscraper. Yeah.
Yeah. But I couldn't find anything.
No, I don't think there is. I think it's just one of those things, one of those weird anomalies.
I was like, is it part of a wider conspiracy? Does it go all the way to the top? And someone's like, this secret I will carry to my grave is about the Losers and the A-Team. That's mad that I would have to do that. But I have. And there's a filing cabinet somewhere with like from the Writers Guild.
It's like Citizen Kane. Rosebud, yeah. The A-Team and the Losers.
It is, yeah, the dying confession.
It was stolen. I can only find John Singleton. That was just before Joe Carnahan took the reins. He was up for doing it. It was going to come out in 2009. He left the project after Fox postponed it so they could concentrate on the Alvin and the Chipmunk sequel.
Oh, that is good, though, to be fair.
It's not bad. It's not bad. Didn't David Cross write an essay about why he shouldn't have been in, something about not being in Alvin and the Chipmunks? You know, he's in Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Yeah.
And I think he wrote an online essay about why.
I would like to find that.
I need to find it. Yeah. Anyway, John Singleton was going to do it. Ice Cube was then going to be B.A. Baracus. In a 2008 interview, Ice Cube said, hell yeah, especially with John Singleton directing, I wouldn't try and duplicate what Mr. T did, but I will have the same impact. It would not be a dream come true, but it would definitely be a good thing to do.
This is what's wrong with you. It's like Jason Patrick going, I don't want to do it, but you have to.
It's the Jason Patrick school of promoting press. A movie. Yeah. It would not be a dream come not yeah. be.
Just to be
a
clear, I don't
true.
Really want to do any of it.
He also says, they want me to do it, and if the business works out right, I'll do it. Yeah. It's just like, oh, come on.
If the money works out right, yeah.
Not a dream of mine. Not a dream. Yeah, okay.
Don't do it then.
There were also rumours of George Clooney as Hannibal Smith.
Oh, I remember that.
Which I can both see
yes.
and fundamentally do not believe.
Why?
Because 2010,
he would do it,
or, yes.
Yeah.
2010, George Clooney was not in a position to go, sure, Hannibal Smith, the A-Team, I'll do that.
Yeah.
He wasn't making those kind of movies.
Yeah, but he would have been good, though. And I say this
oh
as
God.
A big, big Neeson fan.
He'd have been great.
Yeah.
He could have pulled it off completely. But, yeah, he just wouldn't. So, Singleton parts. Smokin' Aces director Joe Carnahan comes on board. He writes the film along with Skip Woods, who his CV includes The Good, The Bad and The Worst. Swordfish.
Yeah, you like that, don't you?
I love that. Saw that with your friend Emma.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We went to see it. And that, I remember coming back and just like buzzing about that first. It's Dominic Senna directs it. And it's that first 360 degree ball bearing explosion at the start of Swordfish. We were sitting, I don't know why, I think Emma forgot her glasses or something. Did she wear glasses? Anyway, so we had to sit at the front. And I was like, ugh, I can sit at the front. But then that explosion, I was like, so glad I was sitting at the front. So I was like, what? It was at the time, and I've rewatched it, and it hasn't aged as well, or it hasn't had the same effect that it did in the cinema. But for me, it was a fucking Trinity doing the kick in the Matrix moment. I was just like, mind blown. Yeah. This is incredible. So, yeah, Swordfish is a good one. Then Hitman, A Good Day to Die Hard, X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Mm.
Yeah. So there
fine.
We go. There
fine.
We go. Brian Bloom also worked on the script, who plays Pike.
Mm. He's great.
So fucking great.
And a bit, I mean, I can't, well, did he write a version of the script where he doesn't get to do anything until the last 20 minutes? Like, what happened?
I know. But there's your villain. I
mean, yeah.
Like, because the movie lacks an antagonist completely.
Well, because he's tried to triangulate the baddie in some way. So you've got these three baddies.
Yeah.
But three bad guys triple crossing each other is not as good as one bad guy. And he sat right there. He's so good.
Brilliant.
Yeah, it's a shame.
So funny. So he also, he obviously he's Pike and he co-wrote the script. He was the co-writer of the best-selling in the series, Call of Duty Modern Warfare, and has pretty much voiced
everything.
A character
yeah.
in like in every cool video game you've ever heard of.
Yeah, yeah.
He's Nick Reese in Call of Duty.
Yeah.
And like, and so, yeah, he's like, he's great, which sort of maybe, this is the way I look at it. If you're being paid a shit ton of money to voice video games,
you don't need it.
And you're just like, I'm not after the fame thing. I like working. Mm-hmm. Are you bothered about being in movies? That's the only way I can explain out the fact that he's so good in this and yet hasn't really done much more after this.
He's just done so much more voice work.
Yeah. Love him so much. So funny. That screwing on the barrel thing, that whole scene in the
brilliant.
Car.
Absolutely brilliant.
Just the timing, the delivery.
Yeah.
Perfect. So. We've got a cast. Unfortunately, timing-wise, this film just misses the best window for two of the biggest stars. So Liam Neeson had done Taken at this point,
yeah,
but wasn't yet the household action star, latter-day action star, that he was going to go on to become.
But Taken was massive at the time, wasn't it?
It was massive, but I think...
Was it a bit of a shock?
It was an anomaly. Mm-hmm. It was like, that was Neeson's action movie, and obviously, you know, because of its success, he went on to do this, but people didn't sort of go, Neeson, action.
Makes sense. Yeah, okay.
So they sort of missed that. And then Bradley Cooper as Face, he'd done The Hangover, which again, mm-hmm. was massive, but then a couple of duds, including... I hate to badmouth your girl here, but All About Steve, Sandra Bullock.
Oh man, it's a bitter pill for me to swallow, because obviously everything she touches is amazing, but it's not.
Not always.
And yeah,
she must shoulder some of the blame.
She simply must.
I'm sorry, but Sandy B is partly to blame because she knows a good script.
It was a humbling day when I saw that film.
She's picked a lot of them. Yeah. What on earth was she doing in that?
I don't know.
Well, I don't even understand the character. I don't want to get into it because it gets pretty dark pretty quickly, but I'm not sure what she's meant to be in that film. So those are the big two. As I was saying, yeah, so he had a couple of duds, but then shortly after this, we get Limitless, which really established him as a leading man, and then obviously gone to do one of his best movies, if not his best movie, Silver Linings Playbook.
Yeah, it's great. I
fucking love that movie.
Yeah. So,
then we get Sholto Copley, Howling Mad Murdoch. This was his first role after his breakout in 2009's District 9.
Yeah.
And sadly, in the same breath, the last time we really get to see Sholto Copley be let loose and do his thing. You know, he improvised a lot in District 9, improvises a lot here. Fun, crazy character. And then not given the roles.
Yeah.
I watched Beast at the weekend.
What's that?
The new Idris Elba Killer Lion movie. He's got he's in that in one of a.
Is it good?
No.
Is it really not?
It makes that cardinal mistake that if you're going to do a killer animal movie,
oh yeah,
you cannot make us sympathise with the animal, because for the whole thing you're sort of like, well, if it's going to die,
oh,
at
like
the end,
Cujo kind of thing.
No, well, yeah, a little bit like Cujo. So at the start of this, the reason the lion is a killer lion is because poachers kill its pride.
Yeah.
And so for the whole thing, it's lost its pride, it's gone a bit mad, and you're like, well, it's a tragic character.
Yeah.
At least, like, you look at something like Ghost in the Darkness, and they try and make the lions actually evil.
Yeah.
Like, they go, the lions are killing for sport.
Yeah.
They're just evil fucking lions. This is a lion that's reacting to humans killing its, like, its kin.
It's fair enough, yeah.
And so you just sort of like, when it, the bit where it has to die to say, like, they're sort of like fist pumping, Idris and his kids are safe.
Yeah.
You're sort of like, poor
lion.
Poor thing.
Yeah.
Jaws 3, where they kill the shark's baby.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, so that's awful. Orca kill a whale. I mean, granted, that is a piece of shit movie, but like the whale gives birth and the propeller flicks its like newborn like onto the deck of the ship and it dies. And you're like, well, I can't wait to see it kill everyone.
Yes.
So, yeah, anyway, that's a bit of an aside. So finally, the weak link. Were you really excited for Beast?
When I saw the tagline, I was like, it's. I like a clean premise and a simple premise, and it seemed to be a bit of a hark back to we speak a lot, don't we? I think we might be coming out of this now. I don't know where we are with, like, you know, COVID, and it was like the death of cinema, and it's just going to be Bond, and then that didn't work, and then it's just going to be superheroes, but now that's all on telly. And I was like, oh, maybe we're seeing a shift back towards simple logline, starry cast, you know how this is going to go. And I felt quite celebratory about it for that, so I just wanted it to be good.
Now you make me feel like a right shit for slagging it off, because
I
really fundamentally believe in that idea, that we get back to sort of those mid-range sort of 60 million
to save
70
cinema.
Million blockbusters to a certain degree, in the sense that, like you say, starry cast and action, and, you know, not just sort of, you know, dramas or like low budget horrors.
Yeah, it's either
stuff.
Oscar bait or I don't know. Like,
exactly. You know, like the Bourne movies, like I remember an interview with Matt Damon, and he was basically saying the movies that I made that made my name just don't exist anymore. It's your mega budget, 250 million, or, you know, you're like micro budget.
Yeah.
But Beast is still not good. So, finally, the weak link, in my opinion, is Quinton Rampage Jackson, MMA fighter turned actor turned back to MMA fighter.
Yeah.
He's not terrible at all. He's just got three other castmates who are all on fire in this. And so he's the weak link.
Mm-hmm.
Only made $177 million. Dollars on a $100 million budget, and so the profit, basically the reason we never got a sequel and this didn't become the franchise that it was intended to, Cooper, Neeson and Carnahan have all gone on record and gone, it simply does not make enough money, which is the bottom line. 48% on Rotten Tomatoes, absolute nonsense. Critics failed this film.
Okay,
seriously. Sholto Copley, he said that people still come up to him. District 9 and this are the two movies that people come up to him. He says, I was in a set. This is when he was
this
doing...
This is like his two movies, though. No, I'm not being... You just said that.
No, it is. I sort of... Because I'm...
You
gone...
set that up.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. Poor Sholto. Shall we talk about the movie?
Please.
Hannibal's first, obviously. Liam Neeson being cool, thanks to some idiot bad guys who go...
It's
the A-Team. Let's remember that, it's the A-Team.
And it's fine. But I remember Hannibal as super smart, really smart. You know, he knows how he's two steps ahead and all the rest of it. Mm. So when they're like, you couldn't possibly use your own gun, you're like, that's fucking lucky as shit though, isn't it? It's like, what of them was like, yeah, of course I can. Like, you are dead. Yeah. So the pin, brilliant. But the idea that they go, well, you can't have your prints on your own gun, is either later on he needs to go, I understand how that team, that gang works so perfectly, and I understand the policing system in this country so intricately that that's how I knew that was going to happen. Yep. Otherwise, what a gamble.
What a bit of luck. The dogs are hungry. Fantastic news. I just took the pin out, and that was the end of my plan.
Yeah.
But if your dogs are hungry, yes, that's fantastic news.
I also thought, I don't know what I was thinking, because I'm more attuned now to animal cruelty, not real animal cruelty, but the perception of what the audience might feel around animals, because I've spent more time with you.
And you're
that's,
welcome.
That's not a good thing. You know, it's not something that I'd ever been really conscious of or cognizant of. I was, you know, aware of a vague sense of like, oh, I'm not sure about that. But you've always said, you know, if you see a dog, people love dogs. You can't kill a dog. And then I was like, oh my God, he's going to just, because the dogs go into the darkness, and I thought you're just going to see a muzzle flat and then dead dogs.
Yep.
And when they came running back out, I was like, That's you.
Yeah. You get to do the opening you want with dogs, and they're just handcuffed together, which is kind of a funny image. Like two dogs handcuffed, neck cuffed, because it's on the necks.
Yeah.
Collar cuffed. Cuffed together. That's the way to do it. Yeah, cuffed together.
Yeah, I do think he's going to kill them though.
But they're stepping out of the darkness and lighting that cigar. love it. Yeah, he's good. He's good in this.
He's himself. I mean, I feel I've seen, maybe it's because Hannibal is a very relatable character, shall we say.
Good, go with that.
Yeah.
Go with that.
He is a bit, what's he called in Taken? I always forget because he's got a normal name. Brian, Dad, whatever he's called. It is Brian.
It's Brian. And his name is...
Brian Normal, whatever
it is. Fine. Brian Normal. Yeah.
I think it is Brian.
Probably stay off Twitter for a bit. They think the guy from Taken is Brian Normal.
Brian Everyman, whatever. Brian Dadman, that's it.
Brian Dadman, yeah. Dadman. Brian Gunman. Brian Finder. Yeah. Brian Finder. There it is. There you go. Yeah.
Chris would know. That's the thing. That's what's so
Brian
annoying.
Brian Searcher. Brian Daughter Finder.
Daughter Finder.
Yep. Yep. Lovely. Yeah. I don't know. I think maybe you're right. I think, yeah, it's Neeson doing Neeson. But he steps when he's in this particular moment, when he steps out of those shadows, very softly, we get those trumpets.
I know, but I got sad that they make me wait too long for. They use that as an echo later for BA, and we'll get to that because there's something that I find very unpleasant about the arc for BA in this film, but obviously we'll get there. But when I hear that music, I'm like, where's the rest of the music?
Fine, let's do this now.
Yep.
What a fucking fuck up. It's genuinely, it is one of the worst decisions in the history of Hollywood.
Sure.
This movie does not have a franchise because someone was too proud to go to trade on the most iconic theme tune of the 1980s. That you put that theme tune over every single action sequence in this and you double the audience response. You play that the minute the credits start, you go, bah, bah, bah. You even do that. You do the original opening, the escape from a maximum security stockade.
Yeah.
You do that at the end. What are people doing? People are walking out of that cinema with the biggest fucking grin on their face because they are watching this because of nostalgia, because of the 80s, because everyone knows the 80s.
Yeah.
So they're walking out, and what they do, they're telling their friends, you know what you should go see? The 80s. I fucking loved it. And they loved it because they walked out to that theme tune and they felt like a fucking hero.
True.
And then we get the franchise, and because someone, and whoever it was, whether it's marketing, if it's Joe Carnahan, and I like Joe Carnahan, he has to hold his hands up and go, this is my call and I fucked up, because this theme tune should be all over this money, not some like jing jigga jing jing rock score that you think like, oh, it's cool, this is, no, it's 2010, we don't need 80s. It's not an 80s theme, it's a fucking iconic theme.
Are you okay?
No, I'm,
I mean, no,
so
listen,
angry because
I love all of this because I could not, there's no way I could have put it better. I 1000% agree. Do not make me wait for it. Also, you make me wait for the fucking narration. I don't get the escape from it till the very end. And I've been sat here, and also I've been sat here too long. The film is too long. It's very puzzling.
It's just bonkers that someone didn't
because
go,
I got excited because I was like, oh, little tease, no problem.
Exactly. It's like, are you wetting my appetite? I was like, cool, cool, cool. And then literally the moment it should come in is when that van crashes through the fence to rescue Face. You're like, there it is.
Yeah.
There's your first moment. Where's the score? Idiots.
Yes.
I got so angry at the time, and I every time I watch this, it's just I would have liked to have seen more of this. This is the kind of thing I like, and it's that stopped us getting a franchise 100%. Nothing else, absolutely nothing else. That is, let's talk about BA. So Quentin Jackson turns up, kicks some ass to get his van back. The last kick is quite good. The breakdancer, like, who flies up to the window, bit of fun. Realise that it's going to be silly fighting, silly movie.
And that's true. In a minute, you know, when Face is boinging down a hill in some tyres, I'm up for it, like daft, but fun daft.
A lot of people don't like that. A lot of people think, oh, then silly. It's like, no, the A-Team's silly. You've got to remember,
it's a kid's show.
This is got to be silly. This is not a serious action movie.
And also, if you try and make, you know, we're 2010, and at the time I was like, you've got to Dark Knight it. You've got to Dark Knight that shit. And it's like, you don't have to Dark Knight everything, though. And well done for not Dark Knighting it, frankly. Yeah.
100%. Bradley Cooper's on form as Face. I mean, those full of zingers when he's getting hit in the face. Good morning! It's like full. It's like, wow, like, now it's a party! I like it. You know, I like shit like that.
You do.
I do like shit like that. He does that thing with the general, General Tuco. You come here and have sex with my wife. And he's like, yeah, she's fucking beautiful.
Yeah.
I was once in Leeds and...
Right, shop left, fine. Okay.
A little shop left outside Bar Revolution on Cole Lane.
Oh, I've been there a lot.
In Leeds?
Yeah.
In Leeds?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we used to have this thing. I used to go to this beer festival in... Is it called Saltaire? The Bradford Beer Festival.
Right.
And then we'd have a few there. Brilliant. And then we would go to Leeds and just we'd go out in Leeds.
Own it.
And that was one of the pit stops along the way, and I love that place.
Oh,
I was always in the good,
you
can't walk in there sober for obvious reasons, but I was always in the right frame of mind. It's a long time ago, I had more energy, but I love it in there.
Revolution. I don't even know if it's still there. I haven't been to Leeds in a while, weirdly, but I'm going to go check it out. If only to relive this moment where we come out, of Revolution, and my friend Dan Seed, Seedy, Chris would love that.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate name. Is he all right with it?
He's fine with
it. Is he a nice person?
No one really calls him that. You've met him. he was at the wedding.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, he's not seedy at all.
No, he's not. He's
really nice.
He's really nice. He bought chili vodka as our last shot.
Yum.
Right. Not when you're, I think we were about sort of 17, 18 maybe. Anyway, we were all sort of either throwing up or rubbing our lips against vehicles to try and cool them down.
You babies.
And I saw my friend Jonathan Messenger, Messi, get punched. The only way I can describe it is a bit like The Shining, where the Scatman Crothers basically he drives and drives and drives and gets to the hotel, mm-hmm. and Jack puts an axe in his back.
Yeah.
And I sort of ran and ran and ran, and I got there and I said to this guy, just punched Jonathan Messenger, Messi, what are you doing? And the guy just went whang and headbutted me in my face. That tooth is false.
Is it?
Well, he headbutted the tooth and he killed, the shock killed the tooth. Ooh. But that happened years later. But, and then he just, thankfully, he just fucking walks off.
Wow.
And I said to Messi, I said, what the fuck was that about? And Messi, sort of like holding his bloody nose, was like, oh, he said, are you looking at my girlfriend? And I said, yeah, she's really hot. I was like, that'll do it. That'll do it. Fucking idiot.
Oh, I hate shit like that.
What, you hate Leeds on a night?
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, I don't know what I was thinking. Oh, it just, that takes me back in a very unpleasant way. Are you looking at my girlfriend? Grow the fuck up. Yes, I am.
Yeah. I mean, the answer to that question is never, yes, she's hot.
No.
Unless.
Like, no, I don't even know who you are. And we're going.
Yeah.
We are leaving now.
Let's get back on track after this break.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So, Hannibal and BA meet by chance. Wow, an airborne ranger happens upon the van of another airborne ranger.
It's really confusing to me, because also, I thought I'd seen it, and this is the point where it's like kind of clicking in, because I was like, oh, they don't know each other. It's like a 10-minute origin story.
20 minutes, even. It's a
so
long start.
Odd, yeah. And then they go and get Murdoch, and they are escaping for ages, and they don't know each other. And I was like, okay, it's quite bold. Like,
putting the team together.
Yeah, putting the team together. But that sort of thing normally really gets to me with the tattoo and it's like, you're a ranger. Yeah, me too. What are the chances? But it's kind of weirdly fine.
Yeah.
Because, because of the love you have for the team, you kind of don't care how they get together. You just want them to get together.
And you're seeing the A-Team van, which is one of the most iconic vehicles of all time. So you're like, okay, cool. So Hannibal, that's the other thing. Do you know why I think they do get away with it? Because Hannibal says, I don't subscribe to coincidence. So it feels like the film is going, okay, you've said coincidence, and that's what we're all thinking.
Yeah, that's true.
So the fact that you've mentioned it, he goes, no matter how random things might appear, there's still a plan. It says plan a lot.
Oh, the through line of the plan. It started to get to me a little bit. Is what, having a plan, the insistence on the script to use the having a plan
yep.
as a character trait, mm. when bear in mind we're meeting them at a time that we're supposed to, like maybe forget about the old show a bit, because it's like, oh, they're just meeting. And liking a plan is not a character trait unless we know why you like a plan so much. Mm. So you need to go, the reason I love plans is because the one time I didn't have a plan, mm. my whole family died, or whatever it is. But then when later on, Face is like, I tried to have a plan and it went wrong. And he's like, don't worry, son, I've got a plan. He's like, oh, God. It's just a bit laboured. Because I think as well, especially with even as much as I love the A-Team, BA's fear of flying, it just gets on my nerves after a while. It's fine on telly because you had a week between each episode and it was funny and yeah. there's familiar. Familiarity and the repetition that's quite comforting, but when you a 2-hour film, you like just get over the flying thing. Like it's annoying now, and the plan thing, it's not enough for me to go cool.
Are you not interested in how BA got his fear of flying?
I am. I think this bit's brilliant.
All right, well, we'll get to that because obviously we got a rescue Face. I only worked it out this time that I thought he was giving a code to Hannibal when he's like Alpha Mike Foxtrot. Mm. I didn't realize it was adios, motherfucker.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that's better. Now I've worked that out. Well done, me. Well done, me. Oh, this is where I bang on about the sorry, I'm just looking at my notes, Clash Brothers.
And they say this is where I bang on about.
This is where I bang on about the theme, because this is where
you've done it.
I've
and
done
that's
it.
Cool.
I've
yeah.
done it.
It was great.
So I'm just getting up to speed here.
Well, it was one of the Alex best bits, to
Thanks.
Be honest. Yeah.
Thanks very much. It's going on the show reel. we get the, you mentioned the Hannibal and Face, the protege master. Face doesn't plan because he's an idiot. He ends up in tyres all the time. So hopefully he'll learn from Hannibal. And we meet Howling Man Murdoch. Just like the TV show, we never learn what HM stands for. So yep. he gets howling mad. Brilliant pilot. Totally insane. I do. I know I said I love Copley in this role, and I do, despite my undying love, despite his politics for Dwight Schultz.
Yeah.
I think sometimes, I don't think it's his ad-libbing that's the problem. I think sometimes maybe the not great bits were chosen for the right moments in the film. There's a bit where he's knighting one of the patients later on, mm-hmm. And it just feels a bit laboured. Mm. But I don't think that's him. I think if you're improvising, which he clearly is, it's a scattershot thing, and you know whoever
yeah.
is editing it goes, I like that.
That
bit.
Was the best one.
It's out of your hands. But overall, I think he's great. Do not love the van getting destroyed.
No, of course.
It feels
disrespectful.
Like, it feels disrespectful, but it feels intentionally disrespectful.
Yeah, of course.
It feels like that thing where Colin's gone, that's the old A team.
Yeah.
Welcome to my A team. You're like, yeah. don't, because if you're going to destroy it, fine. But then I need to see it come back and then present BA with his van, which I'm pretty sure is in an episode of the TV show, where they whip off a sheet and his van.
Yeah.
He's like, my van!
Yeah, yeah,
and you're
yeah.
like, and then they need it for the final thing and BA's back in his van and you get BA in his van, which is the A-team.
Yeah.
So, bad call again. Not as big as the theme tune issue, but still pretty shitty. So, the helicopters.
Amazing. I thought the chase was amazing.
So good.
It's such a good time.
Mm.
It's really good.
It's brilliant.
Yeah.
That loop-de-loop and then
Perfect.
The General Tucoco. And you see the way he did the thing in the
yeah,
helicopter.
That's so good.
Weird little bit to use.
So weird. Mm. And on the page, you'd be like, nope, can't do that. Yeah. Like, he's just got to be a baddie.
Yeah.
But it's just, because you end up going, yeah, you're right. Yeah. It's really good.
He's so good. It's such a good moment. And then the stalling the engines and the heat seekers, because it's so ridiculous.
Yeah,
and you're
is.
Just like, I am in love with this movie. And any problems that I had with the van getting destroyed, the theme.
Yeah, I've forgotten.
I've forgotten
mm-hmm.
for a moment. So, fast forward 8 years. Oh, shit, no, not fast forward 8 years. First, I say that, I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm in love with this movie. And then, because you've just seen General Tuco being funny,
mm-hmm.
rather than have him forced to land over American soil, they kill him.
Yeah.
Bad taste in the mouth.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
You don't kill him.
No.
It's like, that's not what the... Fundamentally, I'm not going to bang on, because Mr. T did a great job of this around the time the movie was released. I'm not going to bang on about how people die in this, and that never happened in the A-Team.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you got to be careful about how you kill them and at what point. And he's just done a funny joke, and we like someone who's funny.
Yeah.
And then to blow him out of the skies, bad call. So it's 8 years later.
Mm. I nearly missed it. I had to watch it like 50 times. I don't know what was wrong with me. I rewound it about 4 times.
Gulf War?
Yeah.
In Iraq?
Yep.
The stand-in for the Vietnam War from the series.
Mm-hmm.
They're together. We get a few more characters. Jessica Biel as Face's ex, Captain Sosa.
Yep.
Big fan.
Really?
I'm coming to why. I'm not going to go early on why, but there is one reason.
Yep.
There's already been a clue why she is absolutely brilliant in this.
Okay.
What's your thoughts?
I like her. I get it. And it's fine. It's the sort of film it is. Not much work is done to, like, we talk about this all the time. Like, what you do, oh, we've got two characters, unless they're just going to spar. The sparks are just flying. And it's like, that's fine. And you do it in the dialogue, but doesn't always translate onto the screen. And so what you're watching is a really good attempt. And I don't know what magic is missing, but it's like, she's just turned up. And now they're rehashing this relationship thing. And I don't know. I just didn't get it. In films like this, where the male character will say to the female character, essentially say, you didn't used to be this uptight. And she's like, oh, damn you, you just get to me kind of thing. And she's like, fucking, you know, she's professional. She has a higher rank than him and all the rest of it. But God, does he know how to get to her. And it's fine.
He's got under my skin again.
That's what I mean.
He mentioned the Steely Dan thing.
That's what I mean. And it's fine when it's Bradley Cooper, because you would just be liquid. There's nothing you can do in the face of a man that looks like that.
So beautiful.
It's just unbearable to look at him. So fine. Of course he can just crank on a Steely Dan CDs. But, you know, she marches in there. God, do your thing. And then it's just that, I get it, the bants, I get it. But I just needed a bit more suggestion of what they were. I can't imagine them together. That's the thing. I imagine she was very different. And I want to see that very different person. Mm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I'll explain in a bit why she is one of the greatest things ever in this movie. So Patrick Wilson shows up as CIA man Lynch. Genuinely, I was racking my brains. I don't think I've ever seen Patrick Wilson not be great. Huge fan. I can't remember. Was it called Morning Glory? I doubt it was. And yet it feels like it probably was.
With Rachel McAdams?
Yes.
Yeah. It is called Morning
Glory. I didn't think he was very good in that, but then I hated that movie.
Yeah.
So anything else, I think he's great. And I think he's so good. This was the first time I went, who's that actor? I didn't really know who he was before I saw the 18.
I like him, yeah.
And I was like, who's that? And he's okay here, but he's playing it quite straight here. But as the movie goes on, he just gets better and better.
Yeah.
You know the bits I'm talking about. Broadsword. That's awesome. Oh, did you come up with that?
I know you Broadsword. Like that, but he kills it. Because cut scene, say it once, but he's like, oh, I should use that. But he's gone too far, like, cut the scene.
Those lines, CIA's got rules. Our rules are just cooler than yours. Brilliant. It's great. He's what bloody Jason Patrick's Max should have been.
Yes, I would say he more fully inhabits that character than Jason Patrick fully inhabits Max, as in he seems like a dickhead that's got a bit too much power and a maniacal streak and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
But again, it's not necessarily the fault of the character. We've got a three-way baddie situation going on. So I don't get the fullness of a baddie. Like, pick a lane, pick one.
Yeah.
And at this point, you don't know that Lynch is a bad guy. And then by the time you do, it kind of comes not out of the blue, but it is a bit of a shock.
Yeah.
And you haven't got time to bed in with it, I don't think.
I think you're right. I think when you said earlier, because they're fighting against each other, they're double-crossing each other. Even at the end, when you want Pike and Lynch to be like this sort of duo, who are like, because they're now together, are on top of it, it's because they're fighting each other and the 80s.
So
they're
care?
Already at a disadvantage.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's silly. More Pike, please. So we get the start of these double cross seams. These engraving plates that are used to print US currency. The A-team have to go and find them. Then Lynch demands that General Morrison send the A-team to rob this truck. I do like the way the truck robbery happens. Big fan, the Ocean's 11 style thing where it's the heist cut in with the planning of the heist.
I agree with you. I think they're very pleased with themselves with this, which is a device. You know, we've seen it in Ocean's 11 and all the Oceans, where it's the present becomes the future, becomes the past and all the rest of it. No problem. However, they repeat it later with the shipping containers. It's like, for fuck's sake, we get it. Like, you know, you've done it once already. What I was mystified by is they have the okay from Morrison to do the job, yes?
Yeah.
Why have they got to steal all their shit then? Where's the financial backing? They're like, we need blue paint, we need a microphone, we need a camera. There you go, lads. I've bought it for you. No, go and fucking steal that shit. It makes no sense.
Oh, yeah.
It's cool and it's fun.
Maybe it's because it's a covert mission that no one really knows about, because they do go on about it later on. They're like, no one knew about this mission apart from General Morrison.
Yeah, who couldn't lend him, what, £300 to get a microphone?
Yeah, also, it would be a red flag if you thought you were going to be double-crossed. It's like, why are we having to steal this? No reason.
And also,
I give you a bit to be a paper trail.
Maybe all he's giving them is like, what I've done is I've commissioned, especially, some tiny figures that you can use during this extended visualization scene, but you have to go and steal everything else. I only had budget for tiny figures. The rest is up to you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird when Hannibal's like, and here's tiny you, and then you jump over this. It's like, where have you got these little men from?
Yeah.
No?
Yeah.
And also, which puts it back with parity with the losers, as handsome a man as Bradley Cooper is, that thing with the French reporter, no. Like, she did not give her consent. You don't just get off with her. Like, you can't. I'm sorry, but you can't. It's not good. And then she's like, okay, cool. She's allowed to react like that. It's whatever, whatever. But the way it's done, the scene, you're just meant to go, that's fine because he's fit. So
it'd be interesting to know where that wave actually broke, what the movie was.
Yeah, that's
I'd be
true.
Fascinated to know what the movie was where someone had written in that stock moment where good looking guy kisses a girl without asking and she goes, this is great.
This is brilliant.
This is what I've been waiting for. So I wonder what it was. I wonder what the first script that was handed in where someone went, yeah, do you know?
We are not going to do
this.
There's a good, there's a campaign by an Australian PR company. There's an Australian campaign to have, as part of the certification process, I don't think this will happen, but it's a fun campaign and it raises awareness and all the rest of it. You know, nowadays you get a much more descriptive telling of what's going to happen. Like, so what they are campaigning for is non-consensual something or other, like non-consensual acts in this film. So they've done a fun campaign where they show every single instance of where they would like it to be retrospectively applied as well, starting with Star Wars. And some people are like, fuck you! But it's like, okay, because it's true. Like, he just leans in for a kiss. And when Han Solo does, and then when you're looking at the still, she's kind of looking like, I don't know.
What?
And it says,
zoinks!
A lack of a yes means there's no consent.
I completely understand the idea, but it's one of those where if you were really serious about making this happen, you wouldn't have made that your first target.
But they're a PR agency, so they know what they're doing, you know.
So, this whole plates thing, I was like, well, it seems like such a weird thing to drop into an 80 movie, this convoluted plot with all the double crossings about these engraving plates.
Yeah.
It was actually the crime they didn't commit that they were arrested for in the original series.
Oh, I love that.
They were sent on a covert mission to steal gold bars from the Bank of Hanoi to end the war in Vietnam. They succeeded, but when their commanding officer was killed, the team was unable to prove they had broken into the bank under orders.
Yeah.
And that was the crime from the original. Cool. Amazing. So it is. It's on the money. So Pike and Black Forest Gatto steal the plates and kill General Morrison.
So what is Black Forest? Was it from the TV show? And I forgot.
No.
So
I remember
they've come up with a Black Ops team and they've called them Black Forest.
Yeah.
Do they not have? They don't have the cake over there then.
No.
Okay.
No, but
that's a shame. They're missing out.
I've never heard Black Forest. I mean, I understand that Black Forest is the Black Forest.
It's
but
a region.
Yeah, you just sort of go Black Forest Gatto.
Yeah, of course.
It's a weird thing. I like the idea of them. I think there's a sort of throwaway line which leans into something bigger, which is this idea that they are not accountable. They can't be prosecuted by a military court, which is fascinating. These private contractors working within the US Army in the Gulf War. That feels like an exciting sort of topic to get into.
Yeah.
But no, they're just Black Forest Gatto. So
it's surreal that you have private military security companies.
Yeah.
Where I used to work, we had a campaign against them because, you know, it's taxpayers' money and they are less accountable than your armed forces in theory and sometimes in practice. And, you know, there are loopholes that they are able to access that the armed forces as run by the government are not able to access. I don't know whether or not they can't be tried. I can't remember. But it's a sort of shadow of your armed forces.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they hike so good, left like frat boys with guns.
Yeah.
Cool. It's cool. So, Sosa gets blamed because something, she was responsible for this whole thing.
Unsure.
Yeah, she gets demoted. Face shouts at Sosa, are you happy now? I don't know why he should be shouting that at her.
Yeah.
She has never at any point gone, I'm going to see you go down for this. So, are you happy now? No.
No.
I've just been demoted because of what you did. If anyone should be shouting at anyone,
I should be
leaning over this fucking wooden railing and going, are you fucking happy face?
So true.
What, I mean, it fits the character because it's boys watching this and they're going, yeah, you tell her, she's fucked up your life.
Yeah, she this in a scene that I know you love and now I've realised why you like her so much, there's a throwaway line that we'll get to which has it's not acceptable.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that. I'm not.
I might have misheard it. But.
6 months later, Lynch visits Hannibal in prison, but a sneaky device stops him being filmed on CCTV until we need to see him on CCTV later where they just sort of go, yeah, we just did this other thing.
It totally works.
Making it so defunct technology
scene,
already.
Lynch is like, we have a CCTV image. We think it's from somewhere in Europe. Oh, is it a test? Because doesn't he go, oh, it's Frankfurt or whatever he says. Where is it? Is it Frankfurt?
It is Frankfurt, but it is.
So when Lynch says, we think it's from somewhere in Europe, is the test, you figure out where it is in Europe because otherwise I won't set you free. Because otherwise I do not understand why Lynch... CCTV stands for closed circuit television. It comes from a camera. So you know what camera it's. I don't understand. Maybe it's a very US thing to go, it's from somewhere in Europe. And someone in the Midwest is like, Europe's fucking tiny, doesn't matter. But we know that Europe is massive. And so to say it's from somewhere in Europe is broad.
Yeah. I'm going to give it a pass because potentially it could have just been sent to the CIA as a file.
With a Europe stamp on it.
No, like they're going to email it. They might not know which camera it came from. But I don't think it is a test. I think the joke is Hannibal's got the same image, but it's crystal clear. Yes. Whereas Lynch's is like all pixelated.
He's like, it could be from anywhere in Europe.
Yeah. I mean, the weird thing is at this point, Lynch is a good guy still.
Yes.
And you are, like, what I find really interesting is that we never get the reveal. Like, it feels like the movie misses a trick.
There's a scene missing, yeah.
Where he suddenly, he, like, later on, you're like, sort of Lynch is being a bit
weird.
Well,
then let's talk about, it's jumping ahead, but we can come back. When he's in the hotel with his guy, and a woman, I think she's called Debs, I think she does get a name, but that's what made me wonder. He's horrible to her, and he's like, why do we have you around? And he's like, oh, because she's hot. But she gives him the finger on the way out, so she gets her little moment back. But for a character that I don't remember seeing again or prior...
No, she's not in it again.
She's named, so that's a kind of a weird choice, because she doesn't... Why would she get a name? Why would she not just be Hot Girl 3 or whatever?
Right.
So I wondered if there was a scene missing where she's a bit more integral to the plot, and it's the reveal that Lynch is a baddie, rather than it's just his attitude just changes completely, and you realise he's a bad guy.
Also, I mean, you definitely want it. It sort of seems wasted that you can't do a big reveal where he's actually in front of the A-team.
Yeah, true.
And it's kind of mad. Like, when you start picking at it, because he sort of gradually becomes bad, independent of talking to Hannibal. And then when Hannibal next interacts with him, Hannibal knows he's a bad guy.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, how do you know that? Because the last thing was a good thing.
Yes.
And... a bit confusing. I like it. I do like the convoluted plot. It does feel more Mission Impossible than the A-Team.
Yeah.
The A-Team, I was 8 years old. I never came away from an episode of the A-Team going, I have no idea what happened.
That's so true.
What on earth?
Yeah, it was very obvious.
Yeah. So Hannibal has a chemical that nearly kills him. It's good. So Satan walks into a bar. Funny.
Again, very risky though. I mean, he does nearly die again. He's not as a boss, and it's same with the losers. I am questioning his leadership abilities a little bit. He seems to like to sail a bit close to the wind.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because when he breaks Face out of prison, so first of all, Face using the sunbed, this is where there was going to be a Dirk Benedict cameo in this thing.
Yeah.
You stayed till the end.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, let's talk about those when we get to them.
Okay.
At the very end. But this is where there was meant to be a Dirk Benedict cameo. But they deleted a scene where when Hannibal breaks Face out, Face fights Hannibal, first of all, because he's like, my parole was coming up.
Yeah.
So maybe that feeds into the idea that he's lost faith in Hannibal and doesn't really believe in him and his ability.
Which would be good.
To plan.
To have a plan.
Yeah. I did the press conference for this. I hosted the press conference for this movie. And I remember saying so to Bradley Cooper. I was like, so Face, your character Face, he seems a bit vain in this. And he went, no, he's not.
No.
I was like, cool. This is going well. Everyone said Quinton might be difficult, but no, it's you. Because I thought, I was thinking about the scene, he's vain.
Like, yeah.
But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe people tan now and it's not a vanity thing.
I think it really dates it. I think now knowing what we do about the harmful effect of UV whatevers, you don't see a tanning booth that often. Because fake tan has really come on as well, so you don't need to. It's your choice, but you don't have to. So it dates it for that. But I think, I don't know, maybe just objected to vain. I don't know.
I think he did. I think maybe he felt like I was saying Bradley Cooper's vain.
You're vain. Yeah, no, yeah. You are.
Yeah. No, you are. That's isn't that dialogue from The Losers? I think it is. I think that's actual dialogue.
But it's funny, isn't it? I think I really like Bradley Cooper as a person. I think. Have you done anything? No, okay.
Oh, he was lovely. I did him again for the A Star Is Born.
Yeah.
And after that, he came up and he was like, man, there was a really, really great, those were really great questions. I was like, I love you.
Yeah,
no?
Oh my God, what? Yeah. Yeah. Please touch me. What?
Yeah.
But the thing, you know, again, it's written for his character and it made me feel a bit sad because I don't remember this in the TV show, but if it had been there, I wouldn't have noticed it anyway because I was a child. Yeah. But the thing with the guard with the knickers, and he's like, you left your red knickers in here.
Oh, yeah.
And she's like, of course I did, or whatever. And it's like, oh, right. Why there's a female guard in your prison, that's not right. Mm. But also, what the fuck? Like, what's this? What's this here for?
Yeah. I mean, you've got the tanning, you got like his big like wardrobe, like he's walking around in a dressing gown, he's got a massive cell.
Yeah.
That's enough to show that he's having a good time in prison.
I think so, yeah.
We don't need to know that he's also like, yeah.
Yeah, so I didn't enjoy that. It just made me feel naive. Like you say, it doesn't need to be there.
No. So we're off to Germany to break Murdoch out of a psychiatric hospital, and so begins the greatest 25 minutes of cinema from 2010. Two of the greatest moments of this film. Great scene number one.
Okay.
3D cinema was already very shit in 2010.
It's so stupid.
Clash of the Titles, Titans, fuck. It's like reflex now. Clash of the Titans, amongst others, had already sunk the 3D cinema ship with some shitty conversions. So Joe Carnahan, it's funny, yeah, having a scene that mocks 3D movies.
Okay.
As you will probably notice, the 3D movie, the text that comes on screen for The Greater Escape, I think the film's called that they're watching. Yeah. We see the name Reginald Barclay. It's a fictional movie. That's his character.
Star Trek, yeah.
And then we get Jessica Biel, Captain Souza, Lieutenant Souza comes in, and granted, she does take her 3D glasses off a patient who's watching this. Apparently, she just snatches them and starts watching it. Let's put that to one side and just enjoy the fact that this is so well done. The music, we get the theme. It's its only use. The original, dun, 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 dun.
Finally. Oh,
beautiful. And then the payoff. Double payoff, wham, the Humvee comes through the wall, wham, beat, cheer! It's so good! It's perfect! I remember fist pump in the air, I was like, yes!
Yes, it's very silly, and it's very enjoyable. But it is very silly. When they break BA out with the door, with the van, that's the kind of silly I enjoy, because it's quite, you know, here we are and the timing is perfect. Driving the truck through the wall at the exact right moment is just stupid.
Brilliant.
Brilliant. But pulling the back off the van, the prison van.
Boring. Seen it a million times. Seen it in everything. I'm sure I've seen it in an X-Men movie. I've seen it in so many different things.
Yeah, fair enough.
I've never seen that gag. And so it's exciting because it's new.
Yeah.
Brilliant and stupid and also warms you up for the next sequence.
Yes, it does. I mean, that's the thing. You do need to get into that headspace, otherwise you're just going to be like, well, that's not possible. So fine.
Well, let's talk about this sequence then. So this is the scene I use to work out if A, someone gets what kind of film the A-Team is, and B, if they're going to like it. Basically, if you think this is one of the greatest action sequences in the last decade, then you get the A-Team, you get what this movie's trying to do, and you are going to fucking love this movie. You can just play some of this movie, you'll spoil it, but you can play this scene and go, do you think that's great? And if they go, fucking awesome, they're flying a tank, then you are basically, you're right for this movie. It's just incredible. I just like, The only reason I bring that up, because that sounds like a really obvious thing to say, is the fact that I spent so long reading people online going, what? This is stupid. like, basically...
I read a lot of that as well. Like, they're like, can't fly a tank.
It's a tank firing its gun at water is not going to slow its descent. It doesn't work like that. I'm like, duh, does it not?
I know. I agree with you that the scene is really well paced. I didn't understand what was going on, and then Carissa says they're trying to fly a tank, and I was like, oh yeah, they fucking are. That is good.
So let's do it. This is why Jessica, in all my life of loving little funny jokes and little asides and little bits of just that I love, I don't think I love anything as much as this. It almost brings me to tears. It gives me goosebumps every time. It's the most well-delivered line I've ever heard. Her delivery of, yeah, no, they're trying to fly that tank, is just perfect. It makes me, I actually well up thinking about it. Okay. It's just so good. And I understand why I love it so much. It's because a girl is looking at a group of guys with that kind of disdainful thing, but kind of admiration at the same time. It's,
yeah,
like, they're so cool, but they're idiots, but I love them.
Yeah. And also, it does make you remember that she was in a couple with one of them. So that's how she knows that sort of thing.
Yes.
It's a textured line. It is good. I enjoyed it. What I got.
Is it the bit? I tried to hear it
it's
twice.
It's so fucking out of order.
Bitch duty, uh-huh, or something.
Fuck you, Joe, whoever brought that. Because
what is it? So he's.
She's getting all. She's. Sorry, I was about to be. God, internalized sexism is a nightmare. Right, so she is the commanding officer, and she is trying to get shit done, and she is giving orders. Mm. What that is played out in that scene with a minor character, possibly unnamed, is he reads her as being like stressed, bossy, she's shouting, and she's like, do this thing now, get it up on the monitor, whatever the fuck it is, doesn't matter. And he says,
rid of the other drone.
Yes. Yeah. And he says to his mate next to him, he says something like, well, I better do it because otherwise I'm going to be on bitch duty.
Right.
Something like that. And it's like, how very dare you? Like, she is your superior and she's given you an order. And it's just that thing always of like, you know, she should be allowed to talk to you like that. But also, if you were a character and you reacted like that, well, like, we can get into that. But I think that line is there for the audience to go, oh, yeah, what a bitch. And I can't have it. I just can't have that. It's not fair. Like,
yeah. I think because I'm still sort of, I'm focused on the tank and stuff. But I heard the word bitch. I couldn't work out what he was. I thought it was, this is me trying to give it a pass because it's sort of sandwiched in the middle of something I love. So I'm sort of finding a way around it probably.
Yeah, it's fine.
I thought it was sort of like the idea that if you, he had to get rid of the drone because she's commanding him to shut down that drone. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you need to shut down that drone. Otherwise, I'm going to be on bitch duty. Was like, I'm going to be taken off this kind of cushy job commanding drones and be doing bitch duty.
Whatever that is.
As in like sort of like cleaning out the latrines, the barracks or whatever.
Hopefully.
I don't know. That was my attempt at sort of ignoring it. But this, for anyone who's like, duh, the tank seems stupid, this is the natural evolution. Remember, the A-Team used to go into a barn in more than one episode, and they'd find, a half
some
a cow, half a cow, a picture of some wood and a hen, and they'd come out in a tank.
A nail gun.
And they'd build an armoured vehicle, and everyone was like, That works. Most barns have everything to make an APC.
Well, there's always a lot of corrugated iron lying around, wasn't there, which was crucial.
Obviously, yeah.
Yeah.
So this is
No, I agree with you. I think, you know, Joe Carnahan has set fire to some sort of sacred symbols and totems so far in a hubristic attempt to be like, no, this is my version. I don't need the music. I don't need that. But this is like you said, it's a natural through line. And you get to have it both ways, don't you? You get to do your own thing whilst leaning into what people have paid their money to see. It's good.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's great. And, you know, and he gets all the little buttons right, you know, the fisherman, like where the tank sort of blows him out and he's been dynamiting the fish. And then that laugh that his wife gives.
Yeah, that little cackle.
She's great. So we've done the big thing. It's quicker from here on in. Now the tank scene's over. I don't want to say kind of a bit downhill from here. Nothing lives up to that. I do like the fact, as we discussed at the start, we get more Pike, Brian Bloom, great villain. Morrison, sorry, the skyscraper heist, fun.
I like BA sliding down the thing.
It's cool.
The rest of it's pretty standard stuff and gas and wow, and we never prepared for that, but you should have done because it's really important. But the sliding down the building, I was like, that feels a little bit fresher. I quite liked it.
That's pretty cool. Weird that Pike can't hit BA, but can hit a cable that BA's attached to.
Sure.
selectively good shots, but, you know, it's the A-team. We get that hilarious scene with Pike in the car and Lynch's right-hand man trying to screw the suppressor onto the gun.
So good.
Just brilliant. Pike and Lynch join forces for a showdown at the LA docks in a plan Faces devised, because that is Faces' arc.
Yeah.
He's managed to become a plan maker as opposed to a plan ignorer.
It's so weak.
BA, you want to talk about his arc. BA, thanks to a quote from Gandhi, has decided that he can kill people, having formerly found peace and made a vow in prison that I forgot to mention, where he wouldn't kill people and he wouldn't have his Mohican, because those two go hand in hand.
Yeah, I find it distasteful. I'll come back to it because I've got a lot to say, but I think it's a mistake. I didn't see this film at the time, despite I thought I did. Did it work at the time? I don't know. Did you?
Giving up violence and then renouncing violence and then getting back into violence.
Being encouraged by his friends to get back into violence. And that the music, you know, you get the sting again when he shaves his mohawk, and he doesn't just kill someone. Eventually, he's like fucking breaks their heads. Like it's not like, oh, I don't know. It's very unpleasant. The whole arc, which I will come back to, when you saw it originally, were you like, yeah, fuck yeah? Like, did it work?
No.
No. Okay, that's good to know.
No, I didn't. I know the bits you mean. I know that, for want of a better example, like when you watch the start of Infinity War and Bruce Banner can't turn into the Hulk, and you're frustrated for him because it's sort of like you're invested in that, like what the Hulk can do and how necessary he is at that moment. You're like, oh my God. Like, you're like, come on, do it. And in this, for it to work, you're like, no, BA, come on, do your
kill
thing.
Kill a man.
And you never are.
No.
You never
and
are.
He spends a good portion of the action, especially the skyscraper scene, where he doesn't need to do it. He's functional within the team without killing anyone.
Yeah.
We'll get there. I don't like it at all.
So, what is Hannibal's arc? Is Hannibal's arc getting his team out of the mess that he put them in Iraq? Because it is him who... They specifically have him make the plan with Morrison alone, and it was his decision to involve him, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
So, Murdoch doesn't have an arc, really, other than the fact that he sort of has a joke arc, in the sense that he's been putting his life in danger, and his teammates... life in danger throughout with his crazy flying. There's also, you know, there's a risk attached to it. And then he gets that line at the end where he goes, who has the most to lose in this face? Me. And you're like, oh, that's kind of funny.
It's funny.
That's kind of funny. And then the film undoes all the goodwill it's earned with one of the most lackluster climaxes that I can remember from film.
You don't like the shipping containers?
The shipping containers is rubbish.
And the fake head? You weren't into like the fake head?
It's also signposted.
Yeah. Well, it is, because the cup trick.
Yeah, the cup trick, but the CGI, it's ugly. It's so bad.
And also the way, once the shipping containers have all sort of blown up and fallen apart and you've got Pike being pursued just before he gets killed by BA, the way it's lit and shot, whatever, it's like the end of the world. Like, it looks like apocalypse.
Yeah.
Which is weird. It took me out of it.
Yeah.
I also think as well, we put a lot into, again, I think it's a mistake of the film to triangulate the baddie. And we've got this huge speech about, with someone like Lynch, it's about their personality. We draw them in, we tease them, or whatever he says, and then we expose them.
Yeah.
And being exposed in this context means lifting up a shipping container and all his colleagues are there. It's like, that's handy. But I also don't see why that would be that shameful for that man, because I don't feel I know him as a baddie. Like, I don't see why that would get him. Why would he care?
Well, and you clearly proved right when John Hamm turns up and goes, yeah, I'm Lynch too, and he's going to be coming with us.
I liked that moment, because it's like, you've got John Hamm there, Bradley Cooper there. That's a weird day on set, isn't it? Because they're obviously just going to handsome off at each other. And I honestly, I've thought about this. I don't know who wins. That's a hard one.
Well, having met both of them in person, I can tell you that whereas sometimes the camera makes people look better in both their instances,
I can't bear it.
They are just as beautiful in real life.
I don't know how you can look directly at them.
I prefer, if I had to pick one, if they were both coming for me, and I was, if if I was sitting on my throne in the back of the bar going, which one shall I pick? I would certainly take Cooper.
Would you?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I think so. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, it's a difficult shout.
Mm.
Cooper is a bit squeaky, like very clean shaven.
Yeah.
Ham's got that sort of slightly,
little bit
of stubble,
a bit
of grey in that stubble as well. Mm. Makes him look dignified.
Yeah.
Like he's lived.
Like he's seen a few things. Like he's been round the block. Yeah. Is that what we mean?
I guess I'd trust him more if he wanted to try something crazy. I mean, like, this isn't new to him.
That's so true.
Yeah.
And I didn't realise how important that is until you said it. This can't be your first. Oh, no, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Big, calloused hands.
I've done this loads.
Yeah. Let me lift you.
And
here.
It always ends well. Yeah. Don't you worry about a thing.
You are going to have the best time. You picked wisely. So, and then the film ends with them escaping into the Los Angeles underground, presumably, and yet it doesn't end with, in 2010, a crack commando unit was sent to prison. Recap the film, get into the music, get into the fucking credits.
It's cracking.
ASAFP.
It's so weird. And these are, like, Carissa, she threatens, jeopardizes her promotion by sneaking this key thing. Yeah. For what? Like, she's never going to see him again. I don't know. I don't get it. Like, it's fine. But
I guess we're supposed to imagine that in the sequel that never was, she'll be back. And then, you know, they'd be at it. She might be wishing it was John Hamm for his experience.
Wow. Yeah.
I want to be lifted in strange ways. So the credits start. Let's get into this. We're nearly there. The credits start, and instead of the A-Team theme, we get some shit guitar riff. Fuck it. Right at the very, very end. So bear in mind, we in 2010, we were not new to what a post-credits slash mid-credits sequence was. This film has the opportunity to slot the two cameos in of Dwight Schultz and Dirk Benedict, who really probably believed they had shot cameos to feature in the movie,
the actual movie itself.
Because they don't work as post-credit sequences because they're scenes
the film
in the movie.
Finished. Yeah. Yeah.
But not to even do a mid-credit sequence. They wait until the last possible functioning opportunity within the confines of a movie, the very end of the credits, and then there's a pause. And then someone's gone, fuck it, they filmed them. Bang.
You don't want to get sued, do you?
Stick them on screen.
Yeah.
It's embarrassing.
It is a bit embarrassing. I mean, it doesn't offend me because it's the medium is saying to me, no one gives a shit, so you don't need to give a shit, so it's fine. So it didn't bother me that we're...
I feel sorry for them. I feel bad for Dirk Benedict and Dwight Schultz. Dirk Benedict, who was born Dirk Neuacher. I can't pronounce it. Anyway, the bottom line is he got his name Benedict from his favourite eggs.
Did he?
Apparently so.
Wow.
Yeah. He says of it, you'll miss me if you blink. I kind of regret doing it because it's a non-part. They wanted to be able to say, oh yeah, the original cast are in it, but we're not. It's 3 seconds. It's kind of insulting.
It's a bit cynical, isn't it?
That was his take on it. And bear in mind, he said that when he still thought he was in the fucking movie. He didn't even know he'd been bumped to the end credits. He said Dwight Schultz was slightly more, it feels like he's having a go at the movie, but he doesn't want to, but he does. It's such a weird quote that he gave about this movie. It pays homage to the series while it eschews its essential working premise. A band of capable military brothers for hire, determined to save underdog and usually poor civilians from scum, the team characters are sufficiently different, and with so many roles reversed from the original, one could say they are not really derivative, save for their names.
That's just words.
Just say you fucking hate him.
Yeah, I don't know what you've just said.
Mr. T. His words were, obviously George Peppard had passed away by the time this came out. People die in the film. This is Mr. T. And there's plenty of sex. But when we did it, no one got hurt. And it was all played for fun and family entertainment. These seem to be elements nobody's interested in anymore. It was too graphic for me. I have no doubt it will do big business at the box office. But it's nothing like the show we turned out every week.
Okay.
So none of the original cast liked it.
Yeah.
Mr. T also said, I don't do a cameo in something that I created.
Okay.
Didn't do great numbers. As I said at the start, 2015, Deadline reported the A-Team was being rebooted as a TV show with Fast and Furious writer Chris Morgan set to produce an A-Team TV show. It never came to pass. And Disney, when they bought Fox, they inherited the A-Team rights, and they have been talking about trying to do another A-Team reboot with names like Will Smith and Dave Bautista mentioned.
There's no one
this
done...
This was pre Slappygate.
No. I'm just, you know, the way these things go, someone's like, it's the A-Team, but they're girls. Yay! And everyone's like, oh, that's brilliant, but... You don't think so? You don't think someone's developing that somewhere when we're all meant to go, wow?
I don't know. I think, I honestly, if you want my honest opinion, I think the Ghostbusters, the female Ghostbusters, like...
was our one shot.
No, I'm not saying that, but it's money, it's business. And yeah. If it wasn't the reaction to it by a toxic fan base, it was the fact that, on top of that, it just didn't do the business.
Yeah.
And so I think potentially, you know...
No
it's
more.
Called show business for a reason. but no, I think some will. We were talking about Cliffhanger. Chris was saying they were doing a female Cliffhanger
that's a good idea.
Never happened. But yeah.
I think it's the kind of thing, someone gets a new job, head of whatever, just put something with girls on the slate. We're not going to do it for obvious reasons, but it does look good.
Yeah, I just think, you know, just why... Oh, it's like baiting a bear. It's like, why not just do a cool thing with women? It's like the A-Team. Like, the fucking Losers is just like the A-Team anyway. Yeah. Why not just have a group of girls and they, you know, but without, you know, riling up that fucking hornet's nest. So, the new A-Team from Disney will be set in the same universe with the potential of a Mr. T cameo.
Okay.
There you go. That's my last bit of business. Shall we do the bits? Best scene!
I'm not going to pick Fly the Tank, actually, which, even though I really enjoyed it, I did enjoy just pure, you know, dopamine enjoyment. I enjoyed the helicopter chase at the start more.
I'm fine with that. It's a brilliant scene. Yep. However, the correct answer is the tank, the flying tank. In fact, the correct answer for scene is everything from the 3D gag up until the tank driving out of the lake. And that is fact. That is not even up for debate. That's the greatest. It's so good. That's the scene I just rewatch. I never told you my Losers one, actually. Oh, I sort of did. I put it as my best scene. But the Jensen Journey drop is my tank thing.
Oh,
it's just
yeah.
not nearly as good.
Yeah.
Most valuable whatever. Shall I begin?
Sure.
Jessica Biel for the reading of the line, no, they're trying to fly that tank.
Good for you. Mine's Brian Bloom. Yeah, I just think you get shortchanged because I've said it about a thousand times. We need one proper baddie. And if I have to pick between Pike and Lynch, I'm going to pick Pike. He's more a natural baddie in terms of this weird shadow operative team that are trying to fuck the A-Team from the start. And I think you can see it in the actor in the car, that whole scene with the muzzle and the whatever. It's really brilliant.
Yes, yeah.
So why can't we not just have a ton more of that from the beginning?
100%. Pike is so good. So good. What would you change?
All right, so I'm just going to get a bit serious for a second. All
fine,
right.
fine. All right. But remember, this is a brilliant film, as you're being fucking
serious.
No,
it's fine. It's not the end of the world. It's just, I'm surprised by it. The arc for BA, as I said, does not sit well for me. You can do a different arc for him, which is he's not scared of flying, whatever, anymore, because that makes the film funny, and I think it wants to be funny. However, so the scene where...
That's cutting. I think it wants to be...
Sorry, that's awful.
I think it's trying to be funny.
It's occasionally funny. So anyway, they're in the diner. They've just rescued him, BA, from the police van, and he's sitting there and he's saying, listen, I need to tell you guys something. And so we have a black man telling his white friends that since he was a child, he's been pegged for violence since he was a child. Which to me is like society's racist perceptions and expectations of someone from his neighbourhood. Or actually the inequality he would have experienced as a person of colour. And then his white friends are saying, are you sure though? I mean,
Well, they're actually saying, we need that side of you.
Yeah. So they want him to lean into that rather than supporting him to do something which, from the language I'm looking at in the film, someone from his neighbourhood to shake off that violence that society is telling him is all he's good for, given his size and his, you know, where he's from, it would be a revolutionary act for him to not be violent. And the white guys are like, but could you though? And then the film goes, fuck yeah, he did it. And it's just, what's happening? Like, that's not, I don't like it. And it's fine. Oh, God, it's, oh, I don't know, was it a different time? I don't think so, but the film really wants me to like it. If it was just a moment, then whatever. But the film is telling me, because the scant use of the music, he gets the sting, so the film is expecting me to leap from my chair and go, this man is ready to kill again. I don't know, really? So I really, really, I think it's deeply wrong.
So your change is BA's arc.
Yeah.
Lose that shit.
Change it.
Fine. I'm going to be serious as well, actually.
Okay.
The theme song was the work of composer Mike Post, who happens to be one of the most sought-after composers in the 1980s. He also did Magnum and... That's right.
Very nice.
Oh, boy.
Very nice.
Yeah, Quantum Leap was my post as well. It should be all over this movie, everywhere. If anything, I want to be sick of the fucking theme tune by the end, because you've used it over every action sequence. I don't. It just needs to be all over this movie, and that is why we don't have a franchise. I've done my rant. Let's get in to the verdict.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
So, do you want to go first?
Yeah, I'm a bit nervous now. Okay. So, I did think about it a lot, and I'll just be honest. We've done the podcast now, so I can lay my cards on the table.
We are still on air.
Still doing a podcast. Neither of these films are very good, are they? And normally...
I don't know why I'm pulling a face. People think I'm accepting that. I'm not. My face is going...
But and normally, I know we're not allowed to talk about running time because it seems a bit churlish or a bit whatever. The Losers is a tight 90, and that's a big draw for me because the A-Team is too long. So then I'm down to my sexism chart. I find The Losers less offensive fractionally from that perspective. Mm. So it comes down to like depth of feeling, and BA's arc really, really just knocked me for six. I just don't like it, and it doesn't sit well enough for me to want to vote for the A-Team, even though I think the set pieces are more enjoyable. So I'm just going to say The Losers. I'm sorry, because I know you're going to have a tantrum, because I bet you said Chris's choice took you by surprise, so I think he did The Losers as well, didn't he?
I love The Losers, I love the A-Team, but The Losers' best sequence is Chris Evans set to Journey, and it's nowhere near as good as the A-Team's best sequence, which is one of the most incredible sequences I've enjoyed in cinema. It's just beautiful. They're trying to fly that tank.
I know.
Fantastic. That whole sequence. It's the A-Team. My vote is the A-Team, and of course I know what Chris's is, and shockingly...
Yeah.
He has gone for The Losers.
Yeah, I didn't know he would.
But... Yeah, he said he doesn't like the new BA, although he wouldn't say that to his face. That was all he offered. So he's gone for The Losers, which means...
What a wisecracking guy he is.
He's non-stop. Even when he's on a plane, he's hilarious. He doesn't even need a beer. It was my delivery. So, yeah, I can't say that I'm not disappointed.
I know, and I'm nervous of your emotions. And
you shouldn't be.
I am.
Look, I haven't had a fucking tantrum in a while. But you know what? This is wrong.
I know.
And this is embarrassing. And I haven't brought up the poll in a while. But the poll will
out.
It will clear my name. It will clear the A-Team.
Your name is not dirt.
It feels like I've been besmirched.
I put
a fantastic case forward for the A-Team.
You did.
And I have been let down.
Yeah.
And seeing as Chris isn't here... I've been let down by you.
And you are pointing your finger near me.
I am jabbing this table. I am angry.
I know.
This is deep fucking impact and Armageddon all over again.
It's
you and Chris
not.
Are just bonkers. Like, the A-Team is Armageddon in this. The Losers is deep impact. It's sort of similar. It's just not as much fucking fun.
No, I know.
Fine. Look, I'm not gonna be in a bad mood because it's Clash-a-ween, so I'll be happy by next week. But right
you
now,
you love it when people choose
wrong.
Your thing. No,
I don't.
I mean, I don't.
You know, I hate that. That's one of the things I hate: people being wrong, and you're both being wrong.
When the poll clears your name in quote marks, you'll be thrilled to bits.
And that is found on our Twitter at ClashPod. So yes, you can vote if you think Vicky and Chris have done us a disservice this week. Then please do get on our Twitter at ClashPod and vote in the poll for which you think is the better film. Clash-a-ween begins next week. Month of horror. I gave you a clue on Monday, which was, I'll get you, my pretty, and your little dog too. end scene. So, the pairing we're doing for our first week of our countdown to Halloween is Black Death versus The Witch.
Very good.
They're both available in a number of places, and The Witch is on Netflix if you have a subscription. So we're back on Monday with our first Clash-oween of the year as we talk about Black Death. In the meantime, do subscribe to us on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Get on Twitter and vote for the A-Team and subscribe. And you know what it is. Tell your friends about us. Start a revolution. All the rest of it. Everything you want to do. And I'm telling you, just go and do it. That's it. Have a lovely weekend. Back on Monday talking Black Death. Bye!
Clash of the Titles is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with something, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.